If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Hello and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. It's your girl, Holly, and today is Monday, which means another Missing Monday for you all. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. Missing Mondays is a segment that I try to do as frequently as I can because it's incredibly important. On Mondays, I try and feature a new missing persons case to help keep their name and information in the media the best that I can. Oftentimes, when the hype of a missing persons case dies down and people go back to their regular daily lives, the families and loved ones are often left feeling forgotten. It is my mission with my platform to keep sharing the names and stories of the missing because someone knows something. It takes one person to come forward with information to blow a case wide open. And you truly never know who might stumble upon these stories and realize they hold a key piece of information that could give a family some answers. So that is why I do what I do. I am incredibly passionate about the missing, and I want to help however I can. So Missing Mondays was born to help give those stories a permanent place on my platform. While some people may forget about those that are missing, to me and my listeners, their stories matter, and we want to help however we can. So I'm excited to share yet another story that needs so much attention. Unfortunately, with these missing persons cases, sometimes the information can be pretty limited. But no matter how much or how little information is out there, I want to share these stories anyway. Today, the only case update that I have is on the Christian Obumsele case. And I have to say that I am livid over the news. Quite frankly, I'm pretty devastated for his family. Courtney Clenny, who fatally stabbed Christian in the chest in what she claims was self-defense, took a plea deal before her trial could begin. Courtney pled guilty to manslaughter with a deadly weapon and was sentenced to just 6 years in state prison with credit for time served. She will then have to serve 5 years of probation. Courtney has already been in custody since 2022, and she was given credit for the 4 years she's been sitting in jail, so she has roughly 2 years remaining that she will be behind bars. This girl is not sorry for what she did to Christian. She has been seen in court previously blowing kisses and sticking her tongue out, causing a scene. And I am just so mad about this plea deal. If you're not familiar with the case, please check it out. I've covered it. It's a crazy story. It's very tragic. It's very sad. And it really blows my mind that she was offered this plea deal. Last thing I want to mention is that I have been covering the Lindsay Clancy case over on Facebook. I am watching the trial unfold every single day. And I have been thoroughly enjoying chatting with everyone on their opinions, their thoughts, and even the crazy conspiracy theories. It's been a lot of fun to hear everyone's opinions and thoughts on this. The topic of postpartum depression and postpartum psychosis has been a major focal point, obviously, because that is kind of what this case centers around. So it's interesting to hear people's stories with experiences that have dealt with that. A lot of people feel some kind of way about, you know, whether she was criminally responsible or not. So if you are following that case as well, make sure that you follow me on Facebook so we can chat about it too, because I want to know your thoughts. Okay, so without further ado, let's get into the reason that you guys are here. Today's Missing Monday episode is on the disappearance of Monique Daniels. Monique Christine Daniels, who also went by the nickname of Nikki, was born on June 16th, 1976, to her mother, Candace, and her biological father, who I am not going to name. Monique was the oldest of her parents' four children, and unfortunately, her early childhood was anything but easy. Monique's biological father was sexually abusive. I don't know all of the details about what happened or who exactly he abused, but what I do know is that it created an incredibly difficult and frightening environment for the children living in that home. They were constantly living in fear. Eventually, Candace divorced Monique's biological father, and he would later be convicted and sent to prison as a sex offender. Candace was in the Air Force, and eventually she met a man named Chuck, who was also serving in the Air Force. The two quickly fell in love, they got married, and Chuck stepped into the role of stepfather to Candace's children. And at first, this seemed like the fresh start the kids desperately needed. In an interview with Crime Watch Daily, Monique's sister Angelique recalled meeting Chuck for the very first time. She said that she was so happy that she jumped into his arms because she was excited to finally have a dad who wasn't going to hurt her. For the first time, she felt like she was going to be safe. She was excited to finally have what she thought would be a normal family and a normal life. After Chuck and Candace married, they went on to have two more children together, making them a family of eight living in Moore, Oklahoma. But according to Angelique, that happily ever after they were hoping for didn't last. With both Chuck and Candace being in the military, their home was run almost like a boot camp situation. There were a lot of strict rules and expectations, and Angelique described frequent fighting within the family, both verbal and physical. And for Monique, who was now a teenager, adjusting to this new family dynamic was especially difficult. Outside of the home, though, Monique seemed to be thriving. She was well-liked by her friends and classmates. Boys were interested in her. She did really well in school and dreamed of becoming a doctor someday. She was also described as the kind of friend that you could always count on, someone who would do whatever she could to help the people that she cared about. But in 1992, when Monique was just 15 years old, she became pregnant. And naturally, this was a huge deal for her parents. I think most parents would be upset or concerned to learn that their 15-year-old daughter was pregnant. But according to Angelique, with Chuck and Candace already being extremely strict, their reaction went far beyond that. Angelique says Monique was forced by her parents to have an abortion. And not long after the abortion, Monique packed her things and ran away from home. What's interesting is that Angelique remembers her parents searching for Monique constantly after she disappeared that first time. Whenever they received a phone call about a possible sighting, Chuck and Candace would rush out to see if they could find her. Eventually, Monique's best friend convinced her to return home to the family. But according to Angelique, the tension inside that house didn't disappear when Monique came back. She described Chuck as someone who would feed into the conflict and keep different members of the family feuding with one another. Then, just a couple of weeks after Monique returned home, Candace, Angelique, and Monique's brother Brian were invited to go on a week-long church choir trip. And Angelique remembers something feeling strange about that entire week. It rained for much of the trip, but that isn't what struck her the most. What she really remembers about that trip was how her mother was acting. Candace was unusually quiet. Angelique couldn't necessarily explain what was wrong, but she remembers feeling like something was bothering her mother, like something just wasn't right. Then the trip ended and they returned home. And almost immediately, Angelique noticed that something was very different. Their normal, spotless, organized home was in complete disarray. There were empty beer cans and cigarette butts scattered throughout the entire house, and some of the cigarettes had even been put out directly on the fireplace mantel. And then inside the bathroom, they found an empty pregnancy test box. And I really want to emphasize just how out of character this was for their home. Remember, Chuck and Candace, they ran a tight ship within their home. They were almost like drill instructors. Everything had a place. The house was normally spotless and organized with hardly anything out of order. So to come home and find beer cans and cigarette butts and an empty pregnancy test box lying around, that wasn't normal. So when Angelique walked into the house and saw it looking like she had never seen it before, it immediately stuck out to her. Something was clearly wrong. And then Chuck told them, quote, "Monique is gone again." According to Angelique, Candace simply responded with, "Really?" And that reaction really bothered Angelique, because this wasn't how her mother had reacted the first time that Monique ran away. The first time, Candace and Chuck searched for her constantly. They followed up on any possible sightings and rushed out whenever they thought someone might know where she was. But this time, it almost seemed like Candace didn't care. The way Angelique remembers it, her mother's attitude was basically kind of like, okay, whatever, Monique ran away again. And as the days passed, Candace and Chuck did nothing to try and track down their 15-year-old daughter. Even stranger, little by little, they seemingly began erasing Monique from the family entirely. They took new family photographs to replace the old ones that included Monique. Talking about Monique was essentially forbidden. And Angelique and her siblings were told that if Monique wanted to be there with the family, she would have been. But there was one person who wasn't willing to just accept that explanation. Monique's Aunt Leslie, which was Candace's sister. Something about this entire situation did not sit right with Leslie. She had an awful feeling that something was wrong, and she tried everything she could to help find Monique. Remember, this was 1992. There was no Facebook to share a missing persons flyer. There was no TikTok or Instagram where thousands of people could see Monique's face within hours. So Leslie started brainstorming other ways to get Monique's name and picture out there. One of those ideas was getting Monique listed with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Leslie called Candace and asked her for the police report number so that she could move forward with getting Monique listed with NCMEC. Candace told Leslie that she would get that information and call her back, but that call never came. And eventually, the family learned why. Candace and Chuck had never reported Monique missing. By this point, approximately 6 months had passed without any sign of Monique. 6 months! Candace and Chuck's explanation was that this was the second time Monique had run away. They claimed they were essentially respecting her wishes because she clearly didn't want to live with the family anymore. But I'm sorry, we are talking about a 15-year-old. Whether your 15-year-old wants to run away or not, they are still your responsibility. To not even report her missing, to seemingly make no effort to find out whether she was safe, to assume that she left voluntarily and was perfectly fine somewhere else, that just doesn't sit right with me. Because how did they even know that Monique had run away? How did they know that she hadn't been hurt, hadn't been abducted, or that something else hadn't happened to her? And I'm sure a lot of you listening are thinking the same thing that I am right now. Something isn't adding up. And now 6 months had passed. Think about how much valuable time had been lost. Memories fade, witnesses forget things, possible sightings become harder to verify. Evidence can disappear. There had been no active search for Monique for 6 months. Then, not long after everyone discovered that a missing persons report had never been filed, something very interesting happened. The phone rang at the Daniels home, Angelique answered, and according to the family, it was Monique. Later that night, Candace began calling relatives to tell them the good news. Monique had finally made contact. She was okay. There was no reason that anyone needed to worry anymore. Then, about a week later, a letter supposedly written by Monique arrived at the Daniels home. It was postmarked from somewhere in Texas. In the letter, Monique reportedly said that she was married and had a baby girl named Chelsea. She explained that she simply wanted to let her mother know that she was okay. Once again, Candace shared the news with the family. But Aunt Leslie, she wasn't buying it. Leslie was so suspicious that she contacted the Moore Police Department and asked if someone could compare the handwriting in this new letter with other letters known to have been written by Monique, because Leslie believed that Candace had written the letter herself and was pretending it came from Monique. Candace agreed to bring the letters to the police station so that they could be examined. But then something incredibly convenient happened. The day before Candace was supposed to turn those letters over to police, the Daniels home was burglarized. Angelique later told Crime Watch Daily that when they went inside, furniture had been tipped over and items like CDs and boomboxes were missing. But apparently, the burglar was interested in something else too, because those letters, those exact letters Candace was supposed to hand over to police the very next day, were gone. And I'm sorry, what kind of person breaking into someone's home is going to steal some electronics, some CDs, and take some handwritten family letters? It, once again, just does not add up. I can't say that I have ever heard of a case where someone broke into a house and decided to steal some family letters. So if that doesn't have red flags a-flying and a giant neon sign flashing that something ain't right, I don't know what will. But this is where the story gets even more bizarre. Because Angelique knew something about those letters that she hadn't told anyone. Angelique finally came forward saying that Monique didn't write those letters. But Aunt Leslie was also wrong about Candace being the one who had forged them. The person who actually wrote those letters was Angelique herself. And Angelique has since said that her involvement in those letters is one of her biggest regrets. According to Angelique, the supposed phone call from Monique was fake too. Remember when Angelique answered the phone and everyone was told that Monique was on the other end? Angelique says that there was no Monique on that phone call. She had pretended that her sister was on the other end. But why would she do that? According to Angelique, Chuck convinced her to. She says Chuck told her that Candace was suicidal and in a very dark place because of Monique's disappearance. He told Angelique that the only thing that he could think that might make her mother feel better was hearing that Monique was alive and okay. So he convinced Angelique that faking contact from Monique was the right thing to do. And Angelique, who was just a kid herself, let me remind you, agreed. But Chuck allegedly didn't stop there. Angelique says he also warned her that if she ever admitted to anyone that the phone call and the letters were fake, she could go to jail for lying and being involved. And this entire thing is just so incredibly sketchy to me. Because think about what Chuck was allegedly doing. His teenage stepdaughter had been missing for months. He hadn't reported her missing, and instead of trying to find her, he was allegedly convincing another child in the home to fake phone calls and letters that would make everyone believe that Monique was alive and well. Why would he do that? Why was he seemingly so unconcerned about where Monique actually was? Did he know where she was? Had something happened to her? Those were questions Angelique, as a young teenage girl herself, was beginning to have. She suspected Chuck and possibly even her own mother knew more about Monique's disappearance than they were admitting. At first, though, Angelique apparently didn't immediately jump to the worst-case scenario. She thought that maybe Chuck had secretly sent Monique away to a military school, because according to Angelique, that was something that he had threatened to do to the kids plenty times before. For the next 2 years, Angelique continued pushing back against her parents and trying to figure out what had actually happened to her sister. And I have to imagine that as time went on, that little voice in the back of her mind became harder and harder to ignore. What if something much worse had happened? And imagine having to consider that possibility as a young teenager yourself. These were her parents, the people who were supposed to protect her. And now she was questioning whether they might know what had happened to her missing sister. Eventually, Angelique had enough of what she believed were lies and a cover-up, so she ran away too. Angelique fled to Michigan to live with Aunt Leslie. And when Leslie picked her up from the bus station, Angelique finally told her the truth. She admitted that she had written those letters. She admitted that the phone call had been fake. And according to Angelique, the first thing Leslie said was, quote, "What has he done with her?" End quote. That question changed everything, because now Angelique was forced to confront the possibility that she had been so afraid of. What if Chuck, and possibly her own mother, had actually done something to Monique? And then something happened that made Angelique and Leslie even more suspicious. When Angelique ran away, Chuck and Candace reported her missing, and they did it almost immediately after realizing that she was gone. Let that sink in. When Angelique disappeared, they contacted police, but when 15-year-old Monique disappeared, they didn't. In fact, the family learned that in the 2 years Monique had been gone, Chuck and Candace had never actually filed a legit missing persons report on her. It wasn't until Angelique ran away that Monique was finally officially reported missing as well. So now, 2 years after Monique was last seen, police were finally involved. And investigators were reportedly shocked to learn that her parents had waited that long to report their oldest daughter missing. Police began questioning Chuck and Candace. They acknowledged that they hadn't filed a report when Monique originally disappeared, and Chuck also admitted that the letters supposedly coming from Monique had been faked. When investigators asked Chuck and Candace if they would take a polygraph test, both of them declined. As police finally began trying to piece together what happened to Monique, they spoke with a neighbor who claimed to have seen Monique getting into a truck on the day she supposedly left home. And I have some questions about that, because by this point, 2 years had passed. How could this neighbor be absolutely certain that the memory they had was from the exact day that Monique disappeared? Maybe they really did see her getting into a truck. I'm not saying that they didn't, but could that have happened on another day? 2 years is a long time to remember something that specific. I can't remember what I ate for dinner last Monday. Shoot, half the time I could barely even remember what I did on Friday. So while the witness account may have supported the idea that Monique willingly left the house, I personally am not completely sold on it. And neither was Angelique. Despite that witness coming forward, Angelique was terrified to return home. She told Aunt Leslie that both of her parents had been mentally and physically abusive toward her. Angelique also went to Child Protective Services and made allegations of child abuse against Chuck and Candace. That triggered another legal battle. Chuck and Candace fought to have Angelique return to Oklahoma, but the judge in Michigan refused to send her back. Eventually, Chuck and Candace pleaded no contest to child abuse and neglect. Meanwhile, Angelique and Leslie weren't going to stop talking about Monique. They began doing everything they could to get media attention for her disappearance. They made several public appearances and openly discussed their belief that Chuck and Candace knew what happened to Monique and that they may have been involved in her disappearance. And then, not long after Angelique and Leslie began publicly speaking out, Chuck and Candace packed up their remaining children and moved to Germany, and they would remain there for approximately 10 years. Now, I know what some of you are probably thinking about the family suddenly moving to Germany. And while it definitely sounds suspicious when you first hear about it, let me remind you that Chuck and Candace were both in the military. And from my understanding, the move to Germany was because of military orders. So I don't want to make it sound like they suddenly fled the country because Angelique and Leslie were speaking out. But eventually, another one of Chuck and Candace's children came forward with their own allegations of abuse and neglect. And then one day, Angelique, who was now an adult and married herself, received a phone call from her brother, Andrew. When she answered, Andrew was crying. Angelique immediately started asking him what was wrong. Was he okay? Why was he crying? And according to Angelique, Andrew said only a few words. Quote, "She wasn't talking," end quote. Angelique immediately knew who he meant. He meant Monique. And she realized her brother was finally about to tell her something about the day their sister disappeared. According to Andrew, on the morning Monique disappeared, she and Chuck had been fighting nonstop. Now, fighting between Monique and Chuck apparently wasn't unusual, but what happened next was. Remember, Candace, Angelique, and one of the other children were away on that week-long choir trip for church. So Chuck was home with Monique and some of the other boys. Andrew says Chuck suddenly announced that they were going on a spur-of-the-moment fishing trip. But before they left, Chuck told the boys they needed to say goodbye to Monique. Not, "We're going fishing, tell your sister we'll see her later." He told them to say goodbye. And according to Andrew, Chuck wouldn't allow them to actually go into Monique's bedroom. Instead, they were only allowed to speak to her through a partially opened bedroom door. From the interview I watched with Andrew, it sounds like the boys couldn't really get a good look at Monique. And what Andrew could see was that Monique appeared to be sitting on the floor with her legs crossed, and she was completely still. She wasn't moving at all. Andrew doesn't specifically say in the interview I saw whether Monique responded when they spoke to her, so I don't want to claim that she didn't. But the way he described that moment certainly made it sound like something wasn't right. Then Chuck loaded the boys into the car for their spontaneous fishing trip. Except, there was one pretty important thing missing. They didn't bring any fishing poles. According to Andrew, they drove around for 2 hours in the pouring rain. Eventually, Chuck pulled off at an exit, he bought the boys some McDonald's, and then they simply turned around and drove back home. No fishing at all. When they finally arrived back at the house, Andrew says Chuck pulled the car into the garage and closed the garage door. Then Chuck went inside and he left the boys sitting in the car. According to Andrew, they remained there for more than an hour before Chuck finally came back and allowed them inside. And this is where Andrew's story gets even more disturbing. As soon as he was allowed inside, Andrew rushed into the bathroom because he had been holding in his pee. While he was in there, he says he suddenly had this eerie feeling that he wasn't in there alone. The shower curtain was closed, and Andrew says that he has reason to believe that Monique was inside that bathtub. But before he could check, Chuck reportedly rushed him out of the bathroom and pushed all of the boys into the bedroom. Chuck told them that he was going to go look for Monique. And then, according to Andrew, he locked the boys inside that bedroom for 2 whole days. After that, Andrew says his memories become less clear. But another brother who had also been in the house reportedly later shared a memory of his own with Angelique. He remembered Chuck taking him somewhere in his truck, and one particular detail stuck out to him. There was an oil barrel in the back of the truck. Angelique believes that barrel contained Monique's body. She believes Chuck took that barrel somewhere and buried it. But I want to be very, very clear here. That is Angelique's belief. It has not been proven. When Andrew finally told Angelique what he remembered, she convinced him to go to the police, and he did. Investigators apparently took his account seriously enough that they eventually obtained a search warrant and excavated areas of the property where the Daniels family had once lived. But they found nothing. No remains were discovered, and there was no physical evidence found there that could prove what happened to Monique. Years later, when Crime Watch Daily approached Chuck and Candace about Monique's disappearance, neither wanted to answer questions about the allegations. They maintained that they didn't know what happened to Monique and that the situation was in God's hands. Candace also pushed back against Angelique's accusations, describing her daughter as troubled and arguing that she wasn't a reliable source. And this is where I need to just make something extremely clear. Chuck and Candace have never been charged with having any involvement in Monique's disappearance. And to my knowledge, neither of them have ever officially been named a suspect in her case. There is no physical evidence proving that either one of them had harmed Monique. There is no body. There is no confirmed crime scene. And there is still no definitive proof that Monique didn't simply run away. The Moore Police Department has continued investigating Monique's disappearance and looking for information that could finally explain what had happened to her. But without evidence establishing foul play, Monique's case remains a missing persons case. So while there are certainly circumstances surrounding her disappearance that raise questions, many, many questions, it is important to separate those questions and allegations from what has actually been proven. Chuck and Candace are presumed innocent. And without any further information or evidence linking them, it's all just speculation at this point. Much of the suspicion surrounding them comes from the delay in reporting Monique missing, the fake phone call and letters, and the memories and allegations later shared by Monique's siblings. But there is another theory. Some people genuinely believe that Monique did run away. There has been speculation that Monique may have been pregnant again, and after what she reportedly experienced with her first pregnancy, she decided to leave home so she couldn't be forced into having another abortion. Under that theory, Monique could have gone somewhere else, had her baby, and eventually created an entirely new life for herself. Maybe by the time she was settled, she was happy. Maybe she didn't want to go back. And I can understand why people think that's possible. But there's one thing I can't get past. Why has she never contacted her siblings? Not even Angelique, not even her Aunt Leslie, the woman who has spent years fighting to find her. We're talking about more than three decades without a confirmed sighting, a phone call, a letter, or any other verified contact from Monique. At some point, you would think that if she were alive and simply wanted nothing to do with her parents, she might have reached out to one of her siblings she grew up with, or her aunt, or someone. She would have reached out to someone. There were many friends that she had in high school, but there has been nothing. Radio silence. And that's why Angelique hasn't stopped fighting for answers. She believes something terrible happened to her sister all those years ago, and she wants to know where Monique is and what happened to her. But until evidence finally answers those questions, we're left with two very different possibilities. Did a frightened 15-year-old girl run away from a difficult home and successfully build an entire new life? Or did something happen to Monique inside that house before anyone even knew that she was missing? Monique Daniels was last seen on June 2nd, 1992 at her home in Moore, Oklahoma. She was just 15 years old. At the time of her disappearance, Monique was approximately 5'4" and weighed 125 pounds. When Monique was last seen, she was reportedly wearing a men's large green military-style flight jacket. She was also wearing a men's diamond ring that was too big for her finger, so she had taped the underside of the ring to help keep it from falling off. Monique is a white female with brown to sandy blonde hair and blue eyes. She also had several distinguishing features that could help identify her. Monique had a half-moon-shaped scar on the outside of her left ankle and approximately 3-inch scar on her right shin. She also had a mole above her left side of her upper lip, and one of her upper incisor teeth was chipped. If Monique is still alive today, she would now be 50 years old. If you or anyone you know has information on the disappearance of Monique Daniels, you can contact the Moore Police Department at 405-793-5151. Crimesters, that is all that I have for this week's episode. Make sure that you are a part of my private Facebook group. You can find it by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. In there, I share all information and pictures pertaining to the cases that I cover. And I also encourage all members to share all things true crime. You can also follow me over on Instagram at Crimeaholly. And if you would like more true crime content, you can find me on TikTok at crimewithholly.podcast. All right, you guys, I will see you next time. But until then, you guys know what to do. Always remember to be aware and take care. Bye-bye.